Hello, and welcome to CBI at 10. Our question today is it time to refresh our employee value proposition, which I, as a journalist, have scribbled next to, at the time of a challenge of a tight labour market, is there an opportunity for whole new ways of making staff feel valued? I'm Giles Whittell. I'm an editor at Tortoise. I'm delighted that we're joined by Jennifer Beckwith, Head of Employment Policy at the CBI, Mark Allen, General Manager, Business and Specialist at Bupa, and Diana Rance, Chief Operating Officer and General Counsel at Kumodo. You can tell us a bit more about Kumodo. I only know that you're a digital media analysis firm and you're probably going to buy us all soon. Let us start with Jennifer, give us, if you wouldn't mind, to start things off, a quick sense of what is on CBI's mind collectively this morning and your mind in relation to this subject.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much, Giles. And it's very good to be with you. Well, I think we haven't met like this for a couple of weeks, so an awful lot has been going on. There was that small matter last week of the PM winning a confidence vote. And really since then, the economy and economic performance has been the watchword of the day. I think the first thing that I would flag is the CBI released its economic forecast over the last couple of weeks. And off the back of that, we had quite a spiky intervention over the weekend, focusing on what the government needs to do to build confidence, raising measures to go for growth. The forecast itself, I think, is quite somber reading. We have downgraded our forecast for growth projections from 3% to 1% next year. And we've also increased our downgrading of what we expect to be a slowdown towards the end of this year. And really, you know, the driver of that is huge inflation, and we are predicting the impact of that being a real slowdown in consumer spending towards the end of the year, which means that there will be a feeling of recession for households. And really the only thing that we are anticipating that takes us away from tipping into technical recession is business investment. And that's why we're doubling down on our messages to government about the importance of building confidence for that business investment. So over the weekend, Tony and our chief economist, Rain, were out in the Sunday Times, on the BBC and on Sky, really putting out our case for seven big decisions that we think the government needs to take. And they are all around helping to ease the labour and skills shortages that we've got at the moment, helping to keep people and goods moving around the economy, and also to unlock investment, particularly in the renewable sector. Those proposals will form the basis of policy development and lobbying that we will do into the autumn, ahead of the autumn budget. It gives us a really good platform, I think, to be calling for confidence in the markets and those business investments that we need to make sure that the economy can, as much as possible, avoid what we are concerned about from the economic forecast. I think the second thing that I would say is, alongside that public lobbying work that we've been doing, we've had a big win, actually, at the beginning of this week. Quite a lot of members, I think, have been speaking to us about the government having committed to a lot of things which have been caught and not delivered because we have been focusing a lot on politics and not very much on policy. So privately, we have been working with Steve Barclay, who is the Chief of Staff and Cabinet Secretary. And on Monday, we had the government's release of the digital strategy, their digital strategy, which is the plan for growing the UK's digital economy. And we very much welcome that. It's been long overdue. And I think the specific thing that we're able to see from that is that our private lobbying has been working alongside some of those public interventions. Now, I think on that, CBI had a particular reference as an organisation that the government will be working on to make that strategy take that strategy into effect. And I think the key things that we'll be looking at from that perspective are streamlining digital regulation, increasing digital exports, and then dealing with the skills gaps that the sector, like so many others, faces. Then the final thing that I would just end on for what's been going on over the last couple of weeks. Last week we had the CBI's Net Zero Conference, an absolutely fantastic event. We had more than 800 people over the 2 days join us. We had more than 50 speakers, and those included people like Alok Sharma, the Energy and Industrial Strategy Minister, Ed Miliband, the Shadow Climate Change Minister, and Helen Whitty, the Treasury Secretary. And really, we use that as a platform to call for national efforts to both improve energy efficiency and also to ask for support for the cost of living impacts that we're seeing through high energy prices. I think the key thing for us there that we're really, really keen on is we've already got follow-up in the diary from that. So a real sense that that platform and those asks are going to get taken forward. And I would also say that if decarbonisation and a decarbonisation journey is of interest to people on the call, we also heard from a range of businesses over the 2 days that were sharing good practice advice. And we've got reflections and write-ups of that on MyCBI. You also asked about thoughts to do with today's topic.
We were saying actually just before we started that sustainability, among many other things, was one of the promises that matters more and more to staff and potential staff. But yes, I mean, you described that fairly severe downgrade. I think 3 to 1% is more severe than the IMF's recent downgrade, juxtaposed oddly with this very tight labour market. So I guess that's the macro picture that makes your offer to employees so important. But what is your thinking as the CBI's employment policy person on creative approaches for employers now?
So I think, yeah, absolutely. The first thing, slow economic growth because of inflation is just one of the headwinds that businesses are facing. The absolute number one thing that we're hearing for businesses across the UK and in all sectors is this concern about labour shortages. So just yesterday, we had data out showing that vacancies are at record highs. For the first time, we've got more people, we've got more vacancies than the number of employed people. So there's a huge deficit. We've got about 600,000 people who have left the labour market over the last couple of years. And also we have had very high job-to-job moves during May. So the labour market picture is incredibly tight, huge competition for people and skills. And that absolutely is the context for answering this question about why employee value proposition is so important now, about recruiting and retaining people. And I think the thing that we sometimes think about when we talk about employee value proposition is just thinking about recruitment, just thinking about what makes a job attractive to staff, thinking primarily about salary and the pay. But absolutely, as you said, it covers a much wider range of things. So I think it's to do with ways of working. It's to do with how organisations talk about purpose, how they are attractive to people from a diverse range of backgrounds, the perks, the benefits, but also the opportunities and the training, the development that can be talked about. and also the support that can be given to staff, particularly now during a period where households are feeling such a tight squeeze. So I think EVP is much broader, and we will get into some of those bits that are more creative, as you say. But I think if I just pick out a few, because really what strikes me is what firms can do to be as attractive as possible for both their existing staff, to retain staff, which is one of the main ways that firms can manage employment costs, but also to be attractive to new staff, is also good for the economy. I don't see them as an either or. So, you know, older workers, for example, we've seen a huge, one of the main drivers for labour shortages has been older workers leaving the labour market. And firms can be thinking about phased retirement, for example. How is it in the ways of working that would enable an older worker to maybe take the work patterns that they want? They don't want the typical 40-hour a week setup, or the generosity of their pensions, for example. We've got women in the labour market who are most at risk of leaving the labour market, or saying that they don't want to take on more hours. One of the main issues is childcare and childcare costs. So as part of your EVP, can you be considering flexible working opportunities, childcare vouchers, those types of things? And finally, you know, we see a huge reason for short-term absence for firms being stress, work-related stress, and the health conditions that come alongside that. So as part of EVP, firms thinking about some salary sacrifice offers that they can do for mental health, physical health, or through providing support through employee assistance programs, things like that. So there are sort of a few ideas of how actually what firms can do to be attractive in the market, and also to be attractive to retaining their staff, can have that wider economic benefit.
We'll come to Mark in just a second, but the salary sacrifice that you just mentioned there, I'll need some translation. Are we talking in practice about unpaid leave?
No, we're talking about things that would be benefits for staff. So it could be things like access to a gym membership. It could be things like rental deposit, or it could be things like bike purchasing that is paid for through payroll.
But with the underlying rationale, mental health, physical. Okay, fine, thank you. Mark, clearly your business involves health insurance products that are right in the middle of this, but we were talking before we started, you were listing a whole lot of non-BUPA specific employee value ideas that you've been hearing about, dealing with. Tell us about some of them. Tell us about those that strike you as innovative and useful.
Great question. I mean, I think I totally agree with the point that the employee value proposition is really important if you're trying to attract people in. And I think employers are increasingly looking for newsworthy snippets that they can put out, whether it's on TikTok or on LinkedIn, wherever you do it, things that capture attention and make you look like a progressive employer. They're just as important once you're in an organization to manage presenteeism, absence, and just as importantly, make people want to hang around and build a career with an organization. I think we see all sorts of things, some in the health and wellbeing space, but there's no doubt there is a momentum in the UK market for people bringing progressive benefits to play. And by benefits, I don't just mean, you know, pension or health insurance. I'm on about the way they treat their employees. So, for example, two I've seen in the last few weeks is inclusive bank holidays, which appeal to people. So you don't have to necessarily take the time off at Christmas if Christmas isn't your religious festival. I think that's big because it suddenly shows the culture of an organization and would attract lots of people in going, oh, that looks like the sort of place where I can be myself then, if that's the kind of commitment you're prepared to make. Another one I saw was for grandparent leave. and especially in terms of attracting an older workforce, where someone thinks, wow, if I work there, what you mean I get a couple of weeks off if I was to become a grandparent, and I can go and spend that time supporting my children in a tough period for them, or getting to know my grandchildren. So some of these are quite emotive benefits, which I think really tune in to making people feel a strong connection to an organization. So, I think we're seeing just imagination being brought to this, which is
Right.
great.
The inclusive bank holidays is really interesting because it makes me think two things. One is what took us all so long, but the other is, especially if you're a smaller business and you're running a smaller business, is it actually quite a business challenge to say to some to say, well, we used to shut the business down for 2 weeks over Christmas, and that had economic benefits apart from anything. We didn't have to heat the buildings, whatever, but now we're going to keep it going. Is that going to be a challenge for some smaller employers?
I think this whole topic is more challenging, actually. I mean, if you go to the really big organizations, big banks, organizations like ours, we've got departments of people who focus on this sort of stuff. They're paid to sweat this day in, day out, and we've got enough people in the organization to be able to cope by, maybe a small group of people not being around at certain times. In small businesses, they don't have the expertise necessarily. It might be, one person expected to manage all of this stuff, and everyone's got to implement these kind of policies in a way that are relevant to the success of their own business. Because there's no prizes for having inclusive bank holidays and then you're out of business in 6 months and no one's got a job. But some of that's about how you lead your business, how you communicate with your people, and help them to understand why you've chosen the suite of things in your benefits portfolio. That's relevant to your market and who you compete with as well.
And can you, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, just sort of building on that, I think there is a couple of points that sparked a thought there. I think one is, Mark, as you said, actually the employee value proposition is also based on what your staff want. And so there's a crucial thing here, which I think is organizations, it's not just about cherry picking what other businesses are doing that might sound really shiny and glamorous. It's thinking, what do my existing staff value, and what are the things that the types of people that I'm seeking in the labor market, what is it that they want? So it might be for that small business that some of the things that we, an inclusive bank holiday doesn't make sense for them, because that is not the basis of their, it is not something that their staff value. But the thing that it strikes me as really crucial here is it's not just what firms can do and some of the ideas that we'll share here, but it's the how they go about thinking of assessing their value proposition. And I think speaking, first and foremost, speaking to existing staff about what they value, because chances are that's going to be what people want to join your organization for. Also thinking about speaking to recruiters, what's the candidate market doing? But the other thing that it prompted me to think that you mentioned, Mark, is just doing the basics right. Because, for example, your culture is something which is going, if you've got a good culture, it is going to prevent that glass door of you that might be a bit negative that puts somebody off. It's going to prevent somebody potentially getting frustrated and looking for a new job over their lunch break. And what I mean by that is some of the things and the new creative ideas that we're talking about can't really supplement, I would say, sort of the day-to-day really important things of having your managers using your managers as really the eyes and ears of the business, of what staff want, the main check-in points to see if staff are doing well, how they're doing, supporting development and things like that. Having a personal touch, people stay in an organization because they feel recognized and rewarded, either through the engagement that they have with managers, or for example, if you've got people that are out on site, making sure they feel still connected to the business, that they are part of regular communications, or that there is a space for people to meet and share with colleagues. And then the very basic thing of getting the facilities right. You know, the toilets, the canteens all have an effect on why somebody wants to stay in your business and is part of your value proposition to say, look, we care about our staff and we invest in the things that have a material impact on people's day-to-day experience of work.
Yeah, getting the basics right. I mean, that sounds like good advice at any point. Mark, I'd like to come back maybe a bit later to sort of some Bupa specific points. But Diana, growing a relatively new business at this particular time, emerging from COVID, dealing with tight labour markets, let's say the B word, we're dealing with the long delayed impact of Brexit too. Is your sense that we're at a very particular point in terms of the importance of EVP, if I can use the acronym? Are you dealing with, for example, unusual numbers of people on manoeuvres, looking around, playing the market, the great resignation, and how are you responding?
So I think I would echo entirely what Jennifer and Mark just said about EVPs needing to be far more than the traditional benefits, you know, your pay packet and benefits, because it is very much more now about what else the company offers. It's about the company values, as Jennifer said, the company culture, what makes your place, what makes your company, organization, somewhere that people want to join and stay. The sorts of things that we've been, I mean, the last 2 years, I think in particular, have made a lot of people question or rethink what matters to them, rethink what they are and aren't prepared to do in their jobs, and question why they've been doing what they've been doing for so long, often to the detriment of their private lives, their physical and mental well-being. So that all needs to get wrapped up in what we're offering companies, recruits as companies. At Qmodo, we're a small enough team to be able to be quite flexible and do things which are quite creative and imaginative, which I recognise is not going to be possible across bigger organisations just yet. But definitely in this environment, we are carrying on practices that we've carried out from the outset, but also more recently, for example, we set up personal development days. And we offer those once a fortnight to all the team. And that's the idea behind that, is to allow staff to take time to stay at the cutting edge of what we're doing, catch up on reading, spend the day equally, actually. If someone needs that day to regroup, we're quite relaxed about that, and find if someone does need that day in a fortnight to regroup, they're going to be more productive in the other days that they're working. So we are being...
One day a fortnight.
One day every fortnight. Yeah. So I'm very interested actually to watch how the results come out of this 4 day week trial that's going across in the UK at the moment, with the 70 companies taking part in that. In our organisation, we implemented it during lockdown as a thank you to the team for their loyalty, their hard work, and recognising that it was a tough time for everybody, and the team enjoyed it and the team valued it. The team carried on working really hard, and we didn't see any drop in productivity. And actually, if anything, we've seen an increase in productivity. It's hard to say how much of that's linked. We're all now working fully remotely, at least for the time being. Obviously, that comes with knock-on effects of how many hours you're fitting into the other days of the week when you're not commuting, and you know, various other factors. But yeah, there are lots of things that we're building into our day-to-day offering that is making Qmodo more attractive to pull people in who we might not otherwise have been able to hire.
Diana, everyone working fully remotely still, in a sense, working from home is a subject for a whole separate webinar. But while we're on that, what are you finding is really valuable to making that work? Because at Tortoise, we've kind of switched from fully at home to fully back in the newsroom, because the sense of a newsroom is happens to be important to our business. Looking back, we really noticed that there was a sort of, people were working all hours, but not necessarily productively, too much in silos. How do you get over that?
So we have catch-ups every day with the team, and more regular catch-ups with whoever you're working with directly during the day. Every week we have a company catch-up to run through deliverables, run through who has done what, to update the wider team. And then day to day, we are making sure that staff are checking in with each other on a work basis, but also quite casually, and going out for exercise, making sure that people are going out walking. We're not having those conversations as we wait for the kettle to boil, or make, you know, go out and grab a coffee. But it's just more important to make the time for each other, to set up meetings that actually take a bit more effort than just sticking with the bare minimum, which I think there is an opportunity to let people sit at home and not be quite engaged enough, not be managed maybe efficiently as you might, it would be easier to do in person. So it's just a matter of making a bit more effort and being more proactive.
And on the recruitment side, when the conversation with a promising potential recruit turns to that person saying, "So what have you got to offer?" How important is flexible working, do you find, among potential recruits? Is it right top of their list, or?
I mean, personally, when I joined, one of the most attractive things for me was making a leap from a city law firm, was the flexible work environment. Back then, which was pre-pandemic, flexible working was far less common. But now I think there is an expectation for a certain level of flexible working, whether it's to do with some of the points Jennifer mentioned around other life commitments, or if it's purely working hours, what works for different people across the team and company. Flexibility, I would say, is absolutely vital. And now it's in our company, certainly. I mean, we work with it because it's technology. There are a lot of developers. A lot of them would be asking to work remotely anyway, because that's that type of work. I appreciate that's not going to be the same in other industries where people do need face-to-face more regularly.
Well, on this, as on one or two other things, Jacob Rees-Mogg feels behind the curve rather than ahead of it. Jennifer, you were kind of raising your hand.
Yeah, well, just to say that flexibility is now consistently coming up as the second, very close behind salary, is one of the main drivers for how individuals choose their work. So I think that is a fundamental seismic shift that we have seen since the pandemic. And as Diane says, I think the challenge for organisations that have different cohorts of staff, particularly where there are roles where they can be done from home versus those that can't, is to think about what flexibility can be built in for people that can't work from home, whether that is things like staggering start and finish times. And we're seeing that a little bit more coming through now, particularly as people are considering how to manage the cost of and the sort of travel, basically, the cost of travel and more flexibility around that. But we've also seen organisations look at some of the other benefits that they can provide staff, where they might need to be on site, but moving to things like compressed hours or annualising hours. So the work arrangement is providing more flexibility, even if the role can't be done from home, like other people within the business can do. And I think firms are really alive now to that point of flexibility being something that individuals are wanting, and their challenge is how to provide an offer that is attractive to as many people in the different roles as possible, and creating a culture in which it's not perceived as an unfairness for how to have flexibility just focused in one part of the business.
I would absolutely agree with that. And I think, having been in quite different, I've been in private and public sector and large and small organisations, and what feels now like very archaic working practices that I was in and was used to, the culture was very, I was surrounded by colleagues basically who were resistant to change, and worked with people who wanted bums on seats and in the, you know, in the office, so presenteeism very much. And the flexibility that I think they thought was not possible, they've now been dragged by the scruff of their necks because of the pandemic. They've realized that actually there are certain tasks that can be done by different members of the team from home remotely, and by force they've had to understand that this flexibility is something that is achievable. I think there is a bit of a wait and see about how much of that can be maintained, you know, when there's a choice.
And here we all are dialing in from home. None of us is in an office. Mark, I did want to come back to health insurance specifically. If I'm an insurer, if I'm an employer considering a really substantive benefit for the purposes of employee well-being, but also retention and recruitment, I don't know, but I'm assuming that the kind of things that you offer would be those that I would consider. How is the current climate, the current state of the labour market affecting your business?
So I remember at the beginning of COVID, actually, I remember a meeting, we still call it the Armageddon meeting, because we all sat there and thought, oh, this is going to be a really nasty year for us, because, you know, private medical insurance is a discretionary benefit, people don't have to provide it, and we could see kind of economic turmoil coming. 2020 was fairly flat and kind of things were okay. But what's really surprised us since kind of the end of 2020 is the appetite for private medical insurance in the UK and associated wellbeing services. And there's a number of factors, I think, there. One is the NHS and the difficulties in accessing treatment in the NHS, the war on talent, and that kind of need to have wellbeing benefits and health benefits as part of your package if you're going to attract people. And there's a lot of evidence that we see that people are more than ever looking to their employer to provide these kind of things, as opposed to just relying on you know, the open market. So we see people entering the market for the first time. We also see a real trend in organisations who traditionally only looked after the top 10%, C-suite, for example, with private medical insurance, and everybody else didn't get anything. We're seeing that open up. So either everybody gets private medical insurance, or organisations looking for ways and means to introduce other benefits. So it could be digital primary care, like a digital GP service, or it could be a Calm app, or just wanting to do something which makes them feel like they're honouring their kind of responsibility to look after their employees well and do part of that attraction piece. I definitely just want to come back to something that both Diana and Jennifer have said, though. So the benefits bit is really important, and of course I'd say that because we'd love to do more of that with people, but don't underestimate the subtleties of just great role modelling and great leadership in organisations. I think our observation is power is moving in organisations. It's no longer true that the CEO makes the decisions and everybody complies. I love the example you give, Diana, about that fortnightly day that you can use almost as you see fit, because what it says to me is you've created an environment where you trust people. And too often I think our benefits packages and policies and practices, they're built around the lowest common denominator, you know, because we don't trust people, so we'd better have a policy in there to catch it. And also that idea about listening to your workforce. So one of the things that I've been involved in is the business in the community wellbeing team. And we've had a great example in a construction firm, for example, where they were about to say to all of their construction workers that they could finish it for every day. And they thought that would be a great thing until the people who were away from home turned around and said, I really don't want to finish it for every day because A, it probably means I've got more time to kill. So now I'm probably going to end up in the pub. Maybe I'll end up drinking more than I really want to. Why not let me work till six? And then actually I can go home at lunchtime on a Friday. I can get back to my family sooner. And that would have way more value to me. Now, that wasn't an employee benefits package. It wasn't PMI. It wasn't health assessments. It was just talking to your employees and adapting your approach based on what they're telling you they want. So I think great employers have got to be doing all of this and really making it all work.
That's so interesting. Listening. Yeah. I mean, on a very small scale, in what used to be a traditional business, but has been transformed by the digital revolution, I find this too. And it's very personal. If you find that you haven't been listening and resentment has been building up and someone is walking, and you could have prevented it if you'd, I'm not saying this has happened at Tortoise, but I can see how it could. Jennifer, before we run out of time, I did want to ask you, I want to ask all of you for closing thoughts. Silver bullets, if there are any that come to mind, because we've talked quite a lot about the fundamental importance of getting the basics right. And everyone seems to agree that just being decent people, listening, responding is all crucial, but I'd be interested to know if there are any particular innovations that you'd pick out. But the CBI is hosting a Future of Work conference soon.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Tell us about
that. Well, it is going to be on the 13th of September, so please do put that in your diaries because I think it's going to be an absolutely fantastic day. It is going to be talking about some of these issues, but also issues that are affecting the world of work more generally. So particularly around issues like the role of HR in driving business decision makings and putting people at the heart of business strategy, things to do with skills, around digital skills in particular, and a whole suite of things where we've got both plenary panels, but also workshops where practitioners and businesses will be sharing good practice advice. So yes, do put that, mark that in your calendars. And at the end of this week, we'll be coming out with more information about that.
Okay. And before we get on to that closing question, which I have for each of you, Jennifer, I wanted to come back to something you said to make sure I didn't misunderstand it. And I'm sure I did misunderstand it. You said there are more vacancies at the moment than there are people employed.
People in employment. Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
We've had for a very long time now, over the last 18 months, vacancy rates going up and up and up and getting to record high levels. Now the number of vacancies is greater. I think it's 1.5 million compared to fewer 1.25, I think, for people in employment. So yes, that discrepancy is a particular concern at the moment, and means that, you know, ultimately what we want from a CBI perspective is the government to play its part in helping to address labour shortages. Some of the very practical things that we'll be calling for, or that we are calling for in that regard, is a new shortage occupation list. You know, we need greater flexibility within our existing immigration system in order for that to work. We need the apprenticeship levy to be flexible. We are calling for a temporary measure for that to be introduced immediately and for it to be made permanent at the autumn budget. And we also need support for businesses to invest in automation. You know, ultimately, creating a situation where roles can be done in a less labour-intensive way. So I think those three things together is sort of where we need government support for to tackle that long-term issue.
Great, thank you. Mark, silver bullets, or are you going to rest on fundamental?
No silver bullets, but what my kind of closing observation would be, I think it's really important for employers to think about embracing this employee value proposition and walking towards topics they may never have looked at before. So a great example would be menopause. And you know, do you understand enough about it as an employer? Your potential employees and your existing employees are probably expecting you to have a point of view on that and to do something about it, and don't underestimate the impact you can have at an individual level by actually having the ability to offer some kind of support and recognizing that kind of piece. So I think we'd encourage people to educate yourself and also challenge where your budgets are going and whether they're really going into the most impactful area for doing good for your workforce, but also improving your attractiveness as an employer.
Thank you. Diana, what's uppermost in your mind to recruit and retain?
I think companies are going to need to know what's happening within their organisations and promote staff engagement and staff well-being as much as possible. And how they do that is going to vary across companies. One thing I didn't mention earlier, actually, was a study I enjoyed last year that Deloitte did that showed that concluded for every pound spent on employee well-being, it showed a £5 return to the company. And I think that's a really useful thing for companies to bear in mind and think of as we do a bit of a watch and wait.
Great. Well, I've been scribbling a bit, and I have, among other things, menopausal consultations, grandparent leave, annualized hours, compressed hours, bicycles by salary sacrifice, personal development days, and this last excellent data point, a pound invested in EVP, a £5 return. Thank you all, Jennifer, Mark, Diana, and everyone who's joined us online. It's been an absolutely fascinating 45 minutes. As I recall, CBI runs to time, so I'm not going to rabbit on. I'll just thank you all again very much. And everyone listening, thanks a lot.